saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection. Choose from 26 stylish colors and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to Nuance Needed.
Today is the Britney episode. It's Britney the bitch. Britney bitch episode. And this was my deep dive. And I've struggled with this one because we've alluded to Britney on the pod in the past. And I think what I struggled with in trying to approach this deep dive was I feel like Britney has been deep dived ad nauseum.
It's a real bear. It's a real thing. Yeah.
It's a real thing. And there are so many other places that you could go to get a play-by-play of her life, her biography, her career, all of it. And so I didn't want it to just be focused on that. I wanted it to obviously be focused on the mental health. Then I realized that's been picked apart ad nauseum in the last couple of years since she got out of her conservatorship and the fight leading up to her being released from her conservatorship. So I was like, what is an approach that I feel hasn't been taken? And I think Britney, what sparked the direction that I decided to take this was in March of this year. So in March of 2026, she was pulled over for drunk driving and was arrested and charged with a DUI. And she pleaded guilty and she apologized for it. And then, you know, go on your way. But that is also the capstone to the last year of the chaotic and unhinged Instagram posts that she has of her dancing naked and her dancing with knives and the tiny furniture of it all and the chaos that clearly is her and her life. And the discussion that when I was following the DUI case over the last couple of months as it's played out, the question that came to my mind is, I'm like, she is the perfect case study of at what point do you allow somebody to torch their own life? Like, where is that line when someone very clearly has some type of a mental health concern, mental health issue? Where do you start to step in? And I think the debate of her conservatorship, because I have a very controversial opinion now that we're out of it a bit. Seeing her behavior, seeing how she was, reading her book, I read her bio cover to cover, which was very clearly ghostwritten. But I don't think the conservatorship was a bad thing. I think it went too far. I think the problem was her dad just saw dollar signs.
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely took massive advantage of her and worked her to the bone.
Massive advantage of her. And however, I think if it had been in the hands of a parent that cared, I think we would be having potentially a different conversation. Where I think that gets dicey is in her custody agreements. I think if you go back and you look at the custody issue with her sons when she was getting divorced from Kevin Federline and how she managed all of that.
How did she manage all of that for people who maybe don't know?
That to me, I wanted to start there. I didn't want to just be like, so she started as a mouseketeer, because I think we all know that she is the pop icon of all pop icons. She is the blueprint. She is the perfect headset, right? Like, when you think of a pop star, you think of Britney's mic, right? Like that. And everybody since then has copied the same thing. So we're not here to talk about her career. We're here to talk about some of these like pivotal moments in her life. So she married Kevin Federline and they had two sons, Sean and Jaden. Sean is now 20. Jaden is now 19. So they are now both adults. And recently, the relationship was strained again. It was reported that they were having no contact with Brittany and they moved back in full time with Kevin. That was when they were in their late teens. So just a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And they were reporting her erratic behavior. There is a report that Kevin submitted to like court paperwork when I think he was filing for a change to the custody agreement. Again, when they were still like older teenagers, right?
Yeah. Did she ever have custody of them though?
No.
Okay.
She was allowed like visitation and then she was eventually allowed like, you know, weekends and sleepovers and things like that. But there was a moment where the boys reported that she stood in their doorway with a knife in the middle of the night. And there's no like further details around the what, the where, the, you know, the how, the why, but the boys are reporting that this moment happened and Kevin informed the courts and then Kevin took the boys. So going all the way back when the boys were little, she reports that she had pretty bad postpartum. So she lost custody of the boys. So the boys were born in 2005 and 2006. And they filed for divorce in 2007. And she lost full custody in 2008. And the moment that caused her to lose custody is when she was put on the 5150 hold because she locked herself in her home with the boys.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And would not let law enforcement in.
Yeah.
And she was threatening herself. They tried to say that she was also threatening the kids at the time. She vehemently denies this. She says they were never in danger. She just, her whole story is like she wanted to get away. She wanted to get away from the paparazzi. She felt that they were chasing her. She wanted to get away. She didn't want people taking photos of her. Yada, yada, yada.
Which is valid. You know, I think that's what's hard is like she was hunted by the paparazzi. And there is like a clear line basically in how we got to choosing Britney Spears as a deep dive is because we talked about Princess Diana. And before that, we talked about Carolyn Bessette. And it is like this line of Britney. I mean, I think Princess Diana was hounded even more than Britney, but like Britney Spears also like is lucky to have not died.
Yes.
By paparazzi, by how insane they hunted her. And I think there's like a huge, you know, thread of paparazzi making you go insane and be not well mentally, because when you are stalked and harassed that way and worked like that, those are not conditions where you can have decent mental health.
And the other reason the custody battle is so important is because that her losing custody was the event that pushed her into the conservatorship.
Mm.
Because of the 5150 hold.
Yeah.
So I think, and I, this isn't like as articulately laid out in the book, at least that I can remember. Most times the conservatorship would have been maybe like 6 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
It would not have been a years long trap, for lack of a better term. And so I think where it opens up for me is because I don't think they've never – I was looking it up and it's never been addressed what help she actually received. It sounds like they
during the conservatorship, you
like
mean?
During the conservatorship. I haven't been able to find out like what actual treatment she experienced other than having a doctor that prescribed her meds.
Yeah, I mean it seems like from her reports in her book – that and therapy, and she didn't like therapy and didn't trust the doctors and felt like the doctors were giving her, you know, unhealthy doses of medication. And I think what we're also kind of like teasing at too is like, who is an unreliable narrator?
Well, and that was what I was going to bring up, because yeah. I think I went back through and skimmed the book again in prep for this. And what I find very interesting is, and I said this at the time when we chatted about it, the book is
and
written.
And we'll link the episode we did of that also.
On the book review. We just did a book review. It wasn't necessarily a deep dive. I think when I flipped back through it and I was reading, because she says she wrote it, didn't she? Or she had a ghostwriter assist her, I think. Or did she write it?
I don't think she addressed either. A lot of people don't address if they have a ghostwriter or not. I think she was like, I want to share my story. Yeah. You know?
Because it's written in, I say this with like all the respect in my heart, it's written from a childlike point of view. The explanation of things is fairly simplistic. And some of the things, I mean, what she's been through is like horrific. Like, don't even get me started on the Justin Timberlake of it all. Like, that guy, what he did to her, what he put her through is absolutely atrocious. But I think that's who he is as a person. So goodbye, Justin. But I think reading it and like watching her reflection of what went on during the conservatorship, what I struggle with, and this is like my clinician brain, this is just where it goes. You know, in every single situation, no matter what the situation is, there are always two sides to a story. And the question that I always have is like, I would love to know what the physician's notes were at the time of what they were observing from her, of why they felt she needed to be on meds, what their justification was for her remaining in the conservatorship for that long. And I think her case was the perfect storm for social media to grasp onto it and have this like, we don't know everything, but clearly this person is saying they're in a bad situation. We need to save this person. This person is being taken advantage of. We need to save this person. And I think you see that runaway on social media with stuff. The thing I've seen it most recently with as well is, did you see the documentary, The Nightmare Upstairs?
No,
about the two kids in Utah that locked themselves in the bedroom upstairs so that they wouldn't have to go visit their dad.
No, oh my God.
Yeah, they had been reporting that their dad had sexually abused them and they didn't want to go to his custody time anymore. And the mom was super passive, but she was in on it. And like the dad eventually decided, because the kids were just like so upset, the dad was like, fine, I'll just like sign away my rights. Like, you're not my kids anymore if you don't want to be my kids. And it was like, it was tragic, but whatever. But that's like social media grabbed that case and yes. ran with it and yes. just said like, these people are being victimized. This is bad, whatever. And the thing I find fascinating about this is I'm like, having been, when I worked in the emergency room, I was cross-trained on psych assessments for psych placement. And when I hear Brittany's story, I think of the people who came in who were so clearly unwell. So unwell. Whether it was they were responding to internal stimuli, whether it was they were just completely overwhelmed and flooded and in a psychotic break and having a psychotic episode that had nothing to do with substances, right? They were this was clearly a mental illness that we were watching unfold. And from there, you know, we're sitting here and sometimes they would be, you know, cuffed to the bed because they are unsafe and they are threatening to hurt themselves and others. And they would be in soft restraints. And we had to have it documented of why we did that and what time it went on. And there was a certain amount of time they had to be out, right? Like, you know this, but me just explaining for those listening. And their perspective was that we were abusing them, right? The perspective of somebody who is in a mental health crisis and they don't want help because they're not in the frame of mind to receive it or understand the gravity of what they're going through, it will always appear, always is a strong word, it will more often than not appear that they are being abused and overpowered by the people that are trying to get them help. And when it comes to Brittany, that is, I'm reminded of that. Like, I'm reminded of that perspective of like, when you are unwell, for whatever reason, perspective is something that you really struggle to grasp onto. Because your brain is in crisis mode and you are in fight or flight and you are not in your logical brain, whether because you can't or because your brain literally is unable to get you there because it doesn't work the way it should. Right? And so when I hear the Brittany story and I see the chaos of like her marriage to Kevin Federline, mm-hmm. the custody chaos, how she seemed to stabilize in the conservatorship. She seemed to be able to work. She was able to put on tours. She was able to do her residencies in Vegas. She did multiple residencies in Vegas. She's having the success. She's able to work. And then when the conservatorship ends, the work ends. Now, I also know she has said, like, she decided herself she doesn't want to work anymore. And she very well have made that decision. But I do find it interesting that she talks about how important her artistry was to her and how much she loved it and that she wanted to be an artist. But then the second she's able to do so freely, she doesn't want to.
I mean, I think what's hard about this, and it's such like a chicken and egg situation, is did the conservatorship, though, drive her to having much, much worse mental health problems? And I think that's more of the side of it that I'm on. When I read her book, it did feel like she didn't want to work anymore. She was exhausted. She wanted to not work. And it does seem like from her perspective, her dad really took advantage of her and like forced her to work and was like doing stuff where I think he made her announce a tour. He announced a tour without her even knowing about a tour.
It was her second
residency.
It was going to be another. It was like the biggest Vegas residency they had done so far. I think it was like the contract was like 18 months or something insane like that. And she at the event, and you can see footage of this. It was in one of the documentaries. She's supposed to get out of the limo. It's supposed to be a whole thing. She's supposed to give like a little announcement speech, what have you. And then she literally just like walks away.
Yeah.
She like walks through the line of people. She doesn't talk to anybody. And she just gets on the stage, waves, and then like walks down and leaves.
Yeah.
And that's like a pretty powerful fuck you.
Yes.
Like, I can have like some serious respect with that. And what I want to be clear of here is I hope it's not coming across that I'm trying to say like, this is all Britney's fault. That's not the conversation we're having here. What I'm curious about is there another side of this conversation around her legitimate wellness? And I think this brings up, there's so many conversations that can be brought up around Britney in terms of like in the early 2000s, the way she was treated and how, you know, she was sexualized as a child. And then people blamed her for being sexualized as a child, right?
Like, yes. While that also does all of the pressure of like being a virgin in that horrible way that we do to girls,
right?
Like, even exactly. It makes me think of Olivia Rodrigo and how much pushback she has gotten recently because she's worn baby doll dresses, and then people are accusing her of acting being like, what was the? I mean, like they're not accusing her of being a pedophile, but they're accusing her of like dressing for a pedophile and dressing too young. And that is crazy because it just like shows to me, once again, we're just blaming. It's like if you cover up, you're pretending to be a little girl. But if you don't cover up, you are a slut. So it's just like no one can win any way. And the problem is actually just men looking at women's bodies, men sexualizing women, men sexualizing children, us normalizing pedophilia to the point that someone, it's not okay for them to wear a dress that looks young. Insane.
Well, and it goes to Sabrina Carpenter's album cover.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? Yep. Like for Man's Best Friend. It goes to like, we tell women you need to explore your sexuality. Then when they explore their sexuality, it's like, no, you did that for the male gaze. And it's like,
yes.
What do you mean? Like we are constantly put in positions where we can't win. And I think pop stars are the ultimate projection for that. In that everything and anything that they do is ripped to shreds. And I think Britney, Christina, all of those pop stars of the early 2000s were the blueprint for that exposure.
Well, and it's a fascinating thing to think about, which I didn't really understand until the past couple years, I think, is just, and I think Taylor Swift really paved the way for a lot of people to recognize that they could have power over their career. I know Olivia Rodrigo specifically talks about how she owns her own music and negotiated that early on because of Taylor Swift's influence. And it is just fascinating to think about how many child stars or pop stars especially are the product of a man and not actually like the pop star has very little control and doesn't get to choose what they do, their sound, their image, a lot of that. It makes me think of like Victoria's Secret, right? And knowing who, what is his name? Les Wexner, right? Who is this old man who is very close with Jeffrey Epstein, is like the architect of Victoria's Secret. And it is so like when you, especially when you put that, how dominating Victoria's Secret culture was in the early 2000s, along with Britney Spears, it is like, so much of like being a millennial was like architected.
Yes.
By old gross men who also were potentially pedophiles if they hung out with Jeffrey Epstein.
And so that's why like this Britney question has like haunted me a lot because clearly going back to like your comparison earlier of the chicken or the egg, right?
Yeah.
Do we have a case where this was a child who under any other circumstance could have grown up developmentally fine, right? Average mental health struggles of like the average human experience, right? And then was thrown into this world of this insane level of pressure and fishbowl and chaos and, you know, pressure from family and pressure from fans and the work that's demanded of you and the industry.
No breaks.
Like album, tour, you know, like, and then she cracked, right? Or were the foundations for her cracking always there? And they were there for years and nobody saw them and didn't care. Once they did, because it was so dramatic and because it was really more of an image issue. It was a PR issue, that entire incident at her house where the police and firefighters had to show up and remove the kids from the home, like the whole thing.
I mean, remember, was the PR issue of her shaving her head before that?
Yes, that was like at the same time.
I think. Right? So like that also happened first. I mean, even her marrying Kevin Federline was like a PR issue as well. Like all of that was such a – and then it creates this dynamic of you almost kind of act out more because you're being told not to do something.
Right.
And you're trying to be like restricted and controlled.
Right.
I mean, I'm of the belief sort of that you can't untangle any of it. You know, I think I think in her book she did talk about – did she talk about being abused by her dad or her dad was just like
– She alluded to – I think there was physical abuse. She also says that he was abusive towards her mom.
Yes. You're right. You're right. Oh, okay. And she did recount that she was sexually harassed by a teacher at age 10.
Yes.
I think anyone going through that as a child – and I think, that was why she wanted to get away from her house and she wanted to be a star so much is because, like, her home life was so terrible. So I think it all feeds into this very complicated narrative. And I think, you know, if she hadn't become a star, it sounds like she could have maybe, like, with help and things like that, worked through some of that and not picked up more struggles along the way. But I also think it leads to this whole conversation about – since we've closed mental hospitals, which was a good thing because mental hospitals were extremely abusive and did not care about people getting well and basically, you know, you couldn't just like get out. Yeah, it was like jail for like a mental, is like we don't have any sort of correct place for people to actually go and get treatment and get better and be treated well and like recover. And it's really, really sad that we don't have things like that. And that a lot of times, you know, I'm thinking of especially with like substance use and stuff like that. I mean, at least we do have like substance use facilities, but a lot of times jail, right? And this could lead to a whole other of like the over incarceration is like jail often becomes a place where people with mental health issues are locked up. And like there's the whole idea of jail replacing mental hospitals.
this is why, like, when I talked about deep dive, it was more this. Like, yeah. Kind of wrestling through, like, I think she needed the conservatorship at the time. Like, mm-hmm. I think she was not well. Like, when you're locked in your house, threatening yourself and your kids, mm-hmm. you need some stabilization. Mm-hmm. But then why her dad had to be granted access to all of her finances is a whole other nightmare, right?
And so I don't think you get to say that a pop star must work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Totally. Like, I think yeah. that if you think she needs something to do, there are other right. things to do.
There are other things. Yeah.
That are much better for your mental health.
She does not have to be like an industry plant.
Yeah. 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 I think it's so tough. You know, like, I am someone who often is on the side of like, if you want to kill yourself, kill yourself. Like, I think that, you know, I think suicide should be legal. I think people should get to choose what they do with their lives. Obviously, I think when it starts to get into harming other people, harming children especially, that is where things start to get dicey and dangerous. And then you factor in like substance use issues and that gets dangerous too. But it is so gray. It's so hard.
I think what was hard in like reanalyzing this Britney story and kind of really thinking like, well, what are my thoughts on like the conservatorship, right? Is in the emergency room, I remember seeing the families of people who were deeply, deeply mentally ill. People yeah. who have schizophrenia, people who have psychosis, people who are severe manic bipolar, right?
Yep.
They have no say over their family's care, over this person. They have no say. They have no ability to help them with their finances. They have no ability to help them navigate the system. These people will disappear for months and years. They have no idea if they're alive or dead because they are what we would categorize as treatment resistant, right? And it was devastating. What these families were heartbroken. Like, all they wanted was to give their family member support and med management and consistent, you know, therapeutic intervention so that they could live a fulfilling life, right? So I think that is the end of the spectrum that I have heard about in my career. And I don't want it to come across as I'm saying like, well, you know, everybody was wrong in thinking Britney needed to be freed and she should still be locked up. It's not that. I can 1000% see that this is a situation where things were taken advantage of and she was abused. And I think largely because her dad was the one in charge of the conservatorship. I think that was a massive part of the problem. I think this guy was prone to controlling, manipulative, abusive behavior.
Yeah, and why someone who
has a DV domestic history?
Violence charges was put in charge of someone's conservatorship is
wild.
Insane.
Wild. And so I've seen this other end of the spectrum where there is a legitimate problem mm-hmm. and this person does need help and they, you know, they can't maintain a living situation because they blow through their money and they, you know, their life is absolute chaos because of their unmanaged mental illness, right? And then it circles back to like, but if they want to live that way, why can't we let them? But are they really in their right frame of mind to decide that that's how they legitimately want to live if they are in the throes of a psychotic break or a psychotic episode? And that's just what it brings up for me. And so when I hear that Britney is completely estranged from like the entirety of her family as well, that brings up for me like, what was their experience? Like, what did they see in her behavior that we never knew about behind closed doors of why they felt like this was necessary? But then I'm also with you of nobody should be forced to work. Mm-hmm. If she wanted to go off and like throw pottery for the rest of her life and have an art studio, she should have been allowed to do that. If she wanted to go be an alligator hunter, she should have been allowed to go do that. Like, whatever it was that she wanted to do.
Maybe not an alligator hunter, because I don't know if she was in the right frame of mind to do that.
No, but she was from Louisiana.
That is true. That is true. But Sam, I think your perspective is really important, and I'm really glad you're sharing it because I think it's a unique perspective that isn't heard very much.
No.
And it's very easy to just be like, everyone should be able to do everything unless you've had that perspective.
Right. Okay, does anybody else have a dad that feels absolutely impossible to shop for? My dad is the kind of guy that anytime I'm like, Dad, I really want to get you something for Father's Day. He's like, no, don't get me anything. Your love is enough, right? And it's like, okay, that's really great, but I need to get you a gift. You deserve to be celebrated too. And so I have decided, instead of asking him what he wants, because that's just too difficult, I'm going to make that decision, that executive decision on my own, and I'm going to get him the most luxurious combo I can think of, which is the Cozy Earth Bamboo Sheet Set and their new Everywhere Pant and Everyday Polo for men. The quality in this is incredible. Your man, whether it's your dad, your brother, your husband, your boyfriend, whoever it is, they are going to absolutely be obsessed with this set. The quality is incredible. It is going to feel like they are just walking around in pajamas. And the Everywhere pant can be worn to work. It can be worn casually. It can be worn professionally. They're incredible. And the bamboo sheet set, they will be thanking you every time they go to bed. I am absolutely obsessed with this. I can't wait to give it to them. The thing I also love about Cozy Earth is how strongly they stand behind the products that they're giving to us. Everything gets a 100-night sleep trial, okay? You can return it after 100 nights if you are not happy with it, and there is a lifetime warranty on clothing and hassle-free returns. For the dads, stepdads, grandpas, and every father figure who shows up, this one's for them. Cozy Earth's bamboo sheet set, Everywhere pant, and Everyday polo are designed to keep him cool, comfortable, and actually relaxed all summer long. Dad lives here. Head to CozyEarth.com and use my code NUANCE, that's N-U-A-N-C-E, for 20% off your order. That's code NUANCE, N-U-A-N-C-E, for an exclusive 20% off. And if you see a post-purchase survey, mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here. And so I wanted a chance to kind of like lay all this out because I'm like, this is so much more complex than just person ill, person controlled, all bad. Right. And like the families that I've worked with that were so desperate for any ability to influence things for good. Like, these were people that just wanted them to be able to have a safe place for their paychecks to land. And not even because it was going to go in their account. They wanted, like, they wanted to manage the account that the paycheck was in without having access to the money. Like, these were the types of problem-solving skills that I heard people trying to put together for their family members who were just, put very crudely, disasters. And they had no ability to do that because the other thing I find interesting about the whole Britney situation is I would hear about how often the courts fell on the side of the person struggling.
Hmm.
Like there was
a much bigger burden of proof.
Yes.
To prove someone doesn't need something.
Correct.
To go against someone's free will.
Exactly. To take away someone's rights.
Yeah.
And I remember a couple years ago when that first documentary came out about like Free Britney and was like really breaking that down. I was still working at the hospital at the time that came out. I think that was like 2023. And I remember thinking, like, I felt so conflicted because everybody's conversation was like, this is horrible. This is awful. This is so bad. And I was like, yeah, from this lens, 1,000%, it's horrific. If her dad is siphoning off freaking $20 million a year from her income, that's awful. But then when I look at the mental illness and the mental health aspect of it, knowing professionally how complex it is to keep somebody in that type of a position for as long as they were, my mind just professionally, I immediately go to like, oh my God, like how bad was it? But then again, like I challenge myself of like, yeah, but that doesn't mean people don't take advantage of things and don't lie about things if they're all financially gaining from her show pony status, then they are inclined to lie about things and to take things to another level. But then also I'm just sitting here and I'm like, but did that keep her alive? You know, I don't know. But then to your point, doesn't matter. Like, I think I want to allow like the door to be open for situations like this, for us to see, like, these are not straightforward stories. And I think we desperately want them to be. And they're not. And I think that the other example that I'm seeing that's happening, like, right now is the discussion around Ariana Grande on her tour. And I think this is another really fine line of, you know, everybody saying don't comment on people's bodies. But at what point?
I think what's so hard too with the Ariana Grande stuff is I worry more. I don't know. I don't fucking know. Like, it's really hard because I do think, I do hear what everyone's saying, and I agree with that on that level. And I don't want it to be normalized for, like, young women growing up or girls seeing this and thinking this is, I mean, like, I don't want to say someone's body is normal or not, but, like, there are clear signs sometimes. Or I know we've, like, loosely talked about this and haven't actually broached the subject of Half-Baked Harvest.
Yeah, there's a problem.
It's so, but it's also, right, like, I think there's a level of us calling it out on social media, like, that's not helping anyone. No. Either. No. Like, especially in her situation, I mean, she's clearly not glamorizing it. She's trying to hide and not show what she looks like anymore.
Right.
So I don't think there's, like, a glamorization of it that's mm-hmm. happening. And I think we all have to be clear of, like, are we really helping anyone by being like, this isn't normal? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If this person can't get help from their, like, friends and family, we have to all be honest with ourselves that us, like, posting about it on social media is not going to do anything either.
No.
So I think it's really complicated and nuanced, and I don't think there's a right answer. And, you know, mm-hmm. I've seen people even with more eating disorder experience than me say we do need to talk about it, and then I've heard people with more eating disorder experience than me saying don't talk about it. So it is just so hard. I don't think there is a consensus or a right answer. I think if you have a child, I think it's something to talk to them about for sure. But I do think we also have to kind of get over ourselves that we're like, you know, our activism online is doing that much either. I mean, I think as we're watching, like, Ariana, like, stumble on tour, and if there is, like, a fall or cancel, like, I think that's all worth talking about, but just straight speculation of how she looks is challenging.
Very challenging. And I think what I push back on with the whole don't comment on people's bodies mm-hmm. is I'm like, well, we've been commenting on quote-unquote fat bodies the entire time.
Totally.
Openly, with gusto in our whole chest, commenting on what are labeled as fat bodies constantly. So I struggle when it all of a sudden becomes somebody that's too thin, or what people would perceive as we're starting to surpass the healthy line of thinness, right? All of a sudden now it's we don't comment on people's bodies.
Yes. Yeah. And especially from the people. I think what you're saying too is, like, it's one person if you don't comment on anyone's bodies, like, right. Great.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people who are coming out, right, like, who are like, let's not comment on her body, probably very openly
right.
criticizing, critique people right. in large bodies.
Right. And I think to, you know, I brought up the Ariana thing because it just feels mm-hmm. so pertinent to, like, the pop star
yes.
element of it. Yeah. Also, like, to swing back to Britney, I think there's a conversation to be had of, like, none of this matters. She's living her life. She got a DUI. She clearly has enough money to still have a legal team that deals with mm-hmm. the DUI.
Yep.
She's living. She's posting. She's doing what she does. Yet, I think it does impact us because none of this happens in a vacuum. And I think hers is a highly publicized story that millions of people are living in some form, in terms of having a family member who struggles with mental illness, or you yourself struggling with mental illness. And maybe sometimes, like, wanting help, wanting somebody who can kind of be the fall guy for those big decisions when you feel like you're not in a good place, but terrified of what it means to give up some of that autonomy. And can you give it up selectively, or do you have to give it all up, right? So I think it's all of these are larger conversations around who we are socially and as a society. And what concerns me with the Britney thing is it's like, okay, well, if I'm not supposed to know a stranger on the internet, right? Like Tegan, half-baked artist. I'm supposed to say like, well, I don't know. That's just a content creator, influencer that I don't know, stranger, whatever. Don't comment on her body. Don't comment on what works for her. But then we're commenting on somebody like Britney. Right. And so it's like you can't be selective of who gets the attention and the help and who doesn't. When you start to open that social media as a channel for us to vent the people that we're worried about, mm-hmm. then people are going to mm-hmm. vent about who they're worried about. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's like you can't. I said this to a client the other day about kind of like sussing out the concept of like parts work.
Yeah.
And, you know, lived experience and what impacts you and what doesn't. And I'm like, you cannot unwind the braid of your life. Everything is connected to everything. An event over here will impact how you show up over there. And I think for socially, it's the same thing, right? Like we can't see something on social media and just immediately go, well, that's never like, that doesn't impact me. Or that doesn't have a sway on my life. And it's like, well, it does, because now that swaying, the normalization, which I hate that word, and we could have an episode on just the word normalization in general. But when we start to have apologists come out of the woodwork for very apparent toxic behaviors, and that can be anything under any scenario, right? There are people that see that and now realize that that type of behavior is okay or approved in certain situations. Or, you know, like with the Britney situation, to now say like, well, that means all forms of this are bad, right? There's no world where this could be a good thing. And I'm like, well, I saw the world where it would have been a really good thing. And so I think that was... This is like taking it super deep, but I think this is where I wanted it to go. Like these larger conversations.
Yeah. And I think like this is all circling too around like I'm just hearing such a failure of public health.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
And I think about this all the time with substance use. And I think about it as there's like a brilliant book called Chasing the Scream that is all about basically it's a defense of like legalized drugs. It goes through different countries and how they've like approached like the opioid crisis. And he spent a lot of time in Vancouver, and Vancouver did something really unique where in terms of if we're talking about like decriminalizing and or legalizing drugs, obviously it is like high risk, high reward and things like that. But one of the things he talked about that Vancouver does is they funded community mental health places where they had a free needle exchange, and anyone at any time could go into that free needle exchange and decide they wanted to get treatment. And if you combine that with decriminalization, it makes a really big difference because, and I can speak to this personally and professionally, you kind of never know when you're going to be open to seeking help. It is sort of random sometimes. And it's why there's so much urgency around when someone is willing to go to rehab. You want to get them in very quickly because they may change their mind. And like there was a lot that really works about that. And Vancouver had a very big opioid problem and they've really worked towards that. And it just makes me think about like decriminalizing mental health and how much we've replaced incarceration with mental health, you know, hospitals, and how we should have facilities where people can actually go, and how much of like the homeless population struggles with mental health issues and they are like criminalized for, you know, their behavior, and how if we could take all of the money that we're spending on other things and like actually invest in our communities and invest in having a place where someone could actually walk in and get help and be given dignified care or not be taken advantage of in terms of a conservatorship, and actually have people who are like independent and in this for the right reasons and are like paid for by the state and aren't making money on it or whatever, what a difference that could make too. Because I think about this, and you know this more than me, like when I worked in rehabs, and even when you like 501 someone or someone, you know, threatens to hurt themselves or hurt someone else, there's such like a level of criteria that they have to meet. And it's pretty easy for someone to know the criteria and not say it, even though they mean it. And it makes me think about being a therapist and how we make safety plans with people that are largely unhelpful, but are a lot of times about like legal liability. And I'm not saying those shouldn't exist, but it is so messy, I think, also because we don't have the structure to help people. Like, I'm not saying people would be excited to go to a facility if they're struggling with their mental health, but if we had a better programs and people actually could get help and be treated in a dignified way, I think we could make a huge difference.
Massive. Because people would actually get what they need to stabilize.
Yes.
And that's the other thing, like throwing them somewhere or simply putting someone in charge of them is not actually care. That's crisis stabilization at certain times, but that's not long-term. How do we teach you how to function and care for yourself and live with, you know, the diagnosis or disorder or struggle that you live with? But I think it's exactly as you said, like when you live in a hyper individualistic society where everything is somehow perceived as your fault and a weakness if you are not able to like fully assimilate into mainstream society, you don't stand a chance. And nobody is going to want to invest in that, because then it just comes down to like, well, the homeless person that has schizophrenia is just, that's their problem. Yeah. It's their problem that they don't want to take their meds. So we just need to like let them lay on the street and be forgotten. And that was like, honestly, that was one of the biggest things that really burnt me out.
Yeah.
Was realizing like the depth of help that people needed, the level of support that would have been required to get them to a stable place, which they were absolutely capable of getting to with those types of resources, and none of it existing. And people coming into us for help and me being like, nothing we can do. Or same thing like with detox, like families would be absolutely devastated when I would let them know I could get this person admitted to detox. They could walk in the front door and immediately sign themselves out.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, because that is... Substance use is the one that's even more challenging, because that is so normalized.
Yep.
Substance use is so normalized at a social level and a casual level that it really is like you really have to there is no level where I could say, I'm signing away your rights. You're going to detox for 4 days to get out of this.
Yeah.
It's completely voluntary, which sometimes that's great. That works great. And then sometimes people are going to drink or snort or shoot up themselves to death. And the families are helpless to watch, and it's heartbreaking. And there's not enough like, you know, support systems for families that are going through this and having to watch this, and the grief of watching somebody just slowly disintegrate in front of your eyes, you know, like,
yeah.
I like that you summed it up of like the failure of the public health system, because all of these problems exist. Mm-hmm. They're happening right now.
And when we like dissolved mental health, like mental hospitals, like, yes, there was a huge portion of people who like should not have been there.
Right.
But it also like dissolved
the support system.
Yeah. Like the emergency room and jail shouldn't be the only places.
No.
You go if you're having a mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm. And the emergency room that I worked in, we were lucky because we were massive. We had 80 beds.
Mm-hmm.
They actually just expanded to like 100 or something like that. So we more often than not had a bed for people to sit in while they waited to see somebody and get treatment. But a lot of places, like if you decide that you're a psychiatric patient, or not decide, if you get labeled as a psychiatric patient, they'll put you in a chair in the hallway.
Oh,
until you like wait to see somebody.
Yeah.
And that's just inexcusable to me. But for some of these small, like smaller rural hospitals, like that's literally the best they can do. And sometimes they'll have one clinician on per shift.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, like, I was working, I was on the clinical social work team, and then there was the crisis team, and the crisis team handled all of the only thing they did was suicide, homicide, psychotic episode assessments. That was all they did. I was cross-trained on that, but I eventually just moved, I stopped covering shifts for them and was just on clinical, which was like death and dying and substance. So in our ER, at any given point, there were four of us working.
Mm-hmm.
Overnight, there would be two. And I mean, there were nights where, like, how one person could manage that was beyond me. There were times where, like, we could have easily had a third person on shift and all three of us would have been working. And that's in Salt Lake City, which is a metropolitan area, but not that damn big.
And it's like a fairly well-off metropolitan area compared to other cities, too.
Yes. Yes. And so I think this whole, like, when I hear this conservatorship conversation, it triggers so much more in me, and it triggers like a depth of conversation that so many people don't want to have because it is so complicated. And there is no clear cut, like, Brittany was wronged, her parents were right, Brittany's parents were wrong, Brittany was right. Like, it's not, I don't think this situation is that clear cut at all.
I think her dad was wrong and probably her mom was wrong. But I think the idea that she may have needed, like, that she needed help was really obvious.
Right. And again, that's what I'm alluding to, right? I'm not excusing any shitty behavior at all. But I think, like, in the cultural moment of the last 10 to 15 years, you're not it feels almost illegal to address, like, an issue like this in such a nuanced way. And to say, like, well, hold on, like, what if she's not doing well? Yeah, it's her right to not be well, but, like, can we all speak truth that maybe it is that she's not well? Like, we don't have to, it doesn't have to be that everything goes and everything works simply because she had been in not a good situation.
And I think it is fair to say someone dancing with knives is not well. That does it. Like, I think that's the nuance, too, is, like, you cannot believe she should be in a conservatorship, which I don't know how I feel or not. But I do think there's this idea that we can't acknowledge that certain behavior is unwellness.
Yes. Yes. And I think it goes back to the Ariana Grande and the Tegan conversation, right? Like,
Yeah. Where's the line?
Where's the line? Like,
and to make it even more complicated, right? Please. It's like, we don't even, right? Like, social media didn't exist 20 years ago.
Right.
So it's like, we have all of this information now. Like, not like Ariana Grande isn't, like, on social media, but, like, people are sharing things on social media. Like, and if we're talking about Britney Spears uploading her own content on social media, that's very clear. It's like, would we have even known these conversations before? And do we know too much?
Right.
And what is the line of, you know, it's one thing if it's problematic and you're by yourself, and it's another thing if it's problematic and it's, like, on the internet, and then you get into, like, kids on the internet, and my brain breaks.
Yeah. Because I think my brain breaks. You just, like, you go over the handlebars just ka-poof, 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 like, all down Mount Everest, and there's no end to it. But I think I wanted to have a space to, like, open up about that element of the Britney conversation, because I don't think it had ever been had.
Yeah,
I think it was.
I don't think people are talking about it.
The presentation of it was so binary. And maybe it is. Like, I'm open to being wrong.
Yeah.
That, like, this was just 100% planned financial abuse by her dad, done and dusted. And if that is the case, I stand corrected. It is that simple. We all move on. I don't know if it is, though. I think it's a massive umbrella with a bunch of different elements underneath it that, to think about in too complex of a way, invites people to be reflective of their own life. And it's really uncomfortable to think of, like, ooh, what would I want in that situation? Or what would I want for my family member?
I think that's where it gets complicated, is it's very easy to theoretically, and I think about this a lot with like my mom's cancer diagnosis. Like it's, you think before it happens to you that you're just like, well, if someone doesn't want treatment, if someone doesn't want this, they can do whatever they want, they can die. And then when you are in that situation, whether it's your child, your loved one, whatever, you're like, oh my God, no, please. No.
Save them.
You're not in your right mind, right?
Right, right.
And that is what's really complicated and challenging. And I think conceptually it's much easier to be for 100% free will. But when it impacts you, especially if you're a parent, it hits differently.
Yeah. The state of everything feels like it's returning like socially to like the worst version of the 2000s in terms of like thinness culture, commentary culture. I think we feel like it's different because we're commenting on different things. And I think we've given ourselves the illusion of like, well, we're not like, you know, commenting on a magazine that somebody clearly put on 10 pounds on the cover, or we're not, you know, we're not ripping people apart on TV or asking them uncomfortable questions in interviews. Now we're just debating it amongst ourselves, amongst millions of people, just casually. And we have more elevated language to talk about it now. So thus it's okay. It's different than it was in the 2000s. And I don't think it is.
I think that's such a good point, Sam, because I think also this illusion that because we are independently on social media, on podcasts, sharing our thoughts, it feels correct compared to before it felt like a narrative was fed to us. And so we were commenting on something that was sinister from the start, but then we don't factor in algorithms, or it makes me think of like the clipping economy episode we did, where actually some of this is it's still manufactured.
Right.
It's just more sinister in some ways because it's the illusion that we're all organically just talking about something, or we're all organically concerned about this, when actually there are still mechanisms going on behind the scenes. We're all just on our, you know, we're all just like have, I don't know, puppets in it, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just the illusion has just carried over through a different lens. It's exactly as you said. It used to just be it was the handful of TV shows that we had access to, magazines, maybe some radio shows, right? If we hone in on the culture of the 2000s and how that was delivered to us, right? Compared to now, I don't think it's different. I really don't. I think we've deluded ourselves into thinking exactly as you said, that because it's us sharing our individual opinions, it's better, right? And we have slightly more educated language and exposure around things. So thus, like, we're better prepared to navigate these conversations. Like, no, none of us are. Like, we all still have, like, the same toxic tendencies that existed. And I think the way, you know, like, the whole, like, thinness culture is coming back, right? There's a discussion to be had there. Like, we're not that different.
Totally. Well, we hope you enjoyed spiraling with us today.
I'm sure it's not what you expected, but as per usual, zero answers. And if you like existing in a world with no answers and
thinking about things
that haunt us for no good goddamn reason.
It's like my favorite question. I wish small talk existed where I could be like, what keeps you up at night?
What wakes you up at 2:54 in the morning?
Yes.
With your head jolting off your pillow.
Yes. Did Britney Spears need to be in a conservatorship? Does she need to be in one now?
That's been good me questions. For the last 2 weeks.
We love you so much. If you want more of this, obviously check out any of the episodes we referenced, but also check out our Substack, nuancedneeded.substack.com. We just did an episode this week where we talked about toxic empathy, Christian nationalism, in the disagreement of empathy, the anti-feminine debate, and I also got into motherhood and daycare wars and all of that. So join us over there. We're also reading Lena Dunham's book, Fame Sick, and we will be discussing that June 24th. So join us over there to discuss that.
And anything you can do to rate, review, share, subscribe would mean the world to us. And we will see you next week.
Bye.